4, 3. Technorama episode 549, The Fresh Maker.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, Thanksgiving holiday is coming up in the U.S. Do you have any turkey leftovers from last year?
Over there, in the media corner.
Mm-mm.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
We used to make a joke about that when I was a kid. You want more food? Mm-mm.
Or is that the Christmas cookies, and now you got turkey down in the basement.
The chimney cookies.
And now you got chimney turkey.
Oh, turkey jerky. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that talks about all kinds of old food, I guess. We take a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. If you're a returning viewer and or listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. My name is Chuck Tomasi here in sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where temperatures gradually cooling off to a mild 75.
I hate you.
Joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm cold and I'm uneasy about the thought of the leftover turkey from last year.
Hey, it's snowing in Michigan and Wisconsin. Get over it.
That's fine. As long as it stays snowing there and not here, I'm fine.
Also joining us in the binary studio one more time is the immutable Brian Brown.
Hi.
Wait, I can mute him. He's got a mute.
Yeah. I'm unmutable, exactly.
Immutable, unmutable.
Hey, I do have some eggnog from last year, if you guys want some of that. It's eggnog cheese. Is that cool?
Cottage nog.
No, it's way beyond that. It's like solid mass. Oh, it's pumpkin spice eggnog, by the way. So pumpkin spice eggnog cheese.
I like when they get to Easter and they just start calling it holiday nog.
Holiday nog.
I Facebook pictured that one time.
It's bad when you go to the grocery store and, you know, the holiday is scratched out with the
Christmas
magic marker, just nog.
Oh yeah.
Veterans Day nog.
Veterans Day nog. Halloween nog.
Election nog.
Yeah.
Yeah, election nog. That has bourbon in it, definitely. Oh my.
What would you vote for? All right, we have some feedback. Yes, we just like playing this music.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today.
That's on the base, everybody.
Pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
I did figure out where that jingle was from.
Where is this jingle from?
Where is it?
It's from Kiss's last farewell tour.
What?
Ooh. Kiss's farewell tour?
This song?
That's from Kiss's last farewell tour. Not the current one.
Okay. Make sure, you know.
Okay. We asked you last week, what is your most disappointing purchase you thought was going to be awesome? We asked this on Facebook, and we got some wonderful responses back this week. Thank you very much to everybody who responded. We have, let me see, the Shark Floor Cleaner for hard-covered floors from Della. She's a little classmate of mine. Gary Lindros, longtime listener and part-time Santa, says, PS3, I was hoping to get a gaming system and a DVD player, but the player interface was lousy. Jack Mangan says, every drink I get from Starbucks.
Which I turn and burn him. So fun.
Go ahead, say it.
So I said, my most disappointing thing is I was going to say Spherical Tomy, which is Jack's novel.
Ow.
Yeah, it was such a goofer.
Wow, that escalated quickly.
Jack's animated gif is a guy curled up on the couch crying.
It's Anthony Edwards crying. It's just hilarious.
I invite Jack over so we can have a smackdown between him and Brian.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Scott Tyler says cable TV. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Brianna, one of the friends of old high school friend says, or daughter of old high school friend says, all the iTunes music ever bought for $1.36 as a teenager.
What was the total on that?
Yeah. Mm. That is bitter at the time. You're like, why did I buy that?
John Miller Jr. says, Folgers natural vanilla coffee. There's so much vanilla flavoring in this coffee. It tastes like flowers.
It's vanilla to the infinite power.
It's a vanilla flavor.
Anything you want to eat with it, avoid at all costs. Michael Slobodna, coworker of ours, says, so far, I've been disappointed in the Sensio Superbook. It's to turn a phone into a laptop, but it's just not quite as seamless as I want.
Huh. Oh, okay.
Evo says, tickets to the Matrix.
Wow.
Craig says, tickets to Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Oh.
To which Brad Miller replies, tickets to any Star Wars prequel or sequel. Ooh, that's harsh.
Yeah.
He's getting deep in that one.
Yeah.
Liz Patterson, old family friend of ours from Lower Michigan, says, the Barber of Seville at the Detroit Opera House. Oh, that's disappointing. I like Minion Fogarty's. This is Grammar Girl writes to us, says, a recently ordered custom jeans through Zozo. They send you what looks like a CGI suit, a black leotard with white dots all over it, and you take pictures of yourself. Oh, Craig's reconnecting. Craig, we lost Craig. We'll let him reconnect while I finish this story. Anyway, you take pictures of yourself, and they're supposed to get your exact measurements and make it perfectly fitting clothes. I waited excitedly for weeks and ripped open the package like a kindergartner at Christmas when it arrived. But they didn't even come close. They were so far off, I couldn't even wear the jeans around the house to do cleaning. They went straight to donation.
Lame.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Can you not hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. You lost connection.
I never disconnected.
Craig is reconnected. Might have been a bad
one. No, I never disconnected.
Thank you, Skype.
I never disconnected. I never disconnected.
Yeah, yeah, we get that. You never disconnected.
Thank you, Craig. Are you still there?
I am.
Okay, good. Wow, you just kept repeating yourself like we couldn't hear you.
I said, yeah, I'm never disconnected. Yeah.
We're still going through the Facebook post. You want to keep going?
Yeah, keep going. I've been listening to you the whole time.
Terry Taylor says, not me, but a mutual family member bought a skin head wig. Not a skinhead wig.
A skin head wig.
Isn't that Harry Potter's owl?
Yeah.
Someone's skinned Hedwig from the back of a comic book. There's your problem right there. Yeah. Let me just say x-ray specs.
Sea monkeys.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has been part of the family lore ever since. Clinton's, I like Clinton's, my first car. I think everybody can appreciate that one.
Actually, I like my first car.
You bought it. It was not a disappointment?
No, ooh, it wasn't. Actually, I bought a Geo Metro.
That's an honest to goodness disconnect. we have to get his camera going. Yes. Hello. Who is this?
I'm back. Actually, the connection got degraded. I was still listening to you, but I don't know what happened.
Did I go robotic on you? That's always my goal.
It sounded like you and Brian were swimming in that frigid cold Phoenix air.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Yeah, so Clinton said his first car, and my first car was great. I had a Geo Metro. I mean, for your first car that you actually purchase, not too bad. You know, it wasn't.
Well, did you buy it new?
Brand new.
Okay.
So my first car was brand new. Now, my first car I was given was a Chevy Nova. It was my grandmother's. It was a 76 Chevy Nova.
That's not a bad
metallic
car.
Green with plaid interior.
Sweet.
It was styling.
Yeah, it was, but it only had 357 miles or something like that.
Sounded like a kilt. Sounded like you just described a kilt.
357 miles?
Yeah,
not 1,000.
Like nope. It was my grandma hardly drove it. That was the whole point. So
to church and back every Sunday.
Pretty much.
That she lived in within walking distance of the church.
Yeah, Brian, it sounded like you were describing a kilt.
It was. My first car
green with
plaid
interior.
I walked everywhere.
We've got other answers in here. VW Jetta, high top sneakers, so uncomfortable. I don't know that. I think the last pair. Have I ever owned high top sneakers? I don't think so.
I have.
I've had hiking boots that were kind of high hiking like boots, that, yeah. But I did not like them. I prefer like hiking shoes.
Yeah,
I don't like the going around the ankles.
Yeah, I had high tops in high school. Usually,
I had hiking boots that went up to like the bottom of your calf. That was like standard footwear in eighth grade.
That's a boot boot. Yeah, I mean like
that's a boot boot.
Yeah, I mean like a hiking boots that go out just over your ankle. I can't. Yeah. I didn't like that. I don't like that at all.
I had some of those. Those weren't any good.
I love Brian Parker's one. Which is the vibrating electric football game where the players just move in circles. Where, exactly.
You nailed it, Brian. You set them up in very careful patterns and they just sort of jumble around and fall down. And
Brian wins.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I was expecting here, I thought for sure somebody's going to say the 2016 elections, but, you know, that's just me.
Wait.
Nobody purchased that, or did they? Or did they?
Yeah. Ah, see.
Okay.
Hey, by the way, I like how you posted this with the flames and the question.
There's a method to my madness in this thing. And we will get more opinions over the next few days. It's always fun to do those. All right, onward to the feedback. We have a letter from Claudio. He says, "Hey, gents, great show as always. I need to catch up live again. Tried last week, but that time change must have mucked me up. Just to clarify something on AT&T versus BSD. Yes, BSD, the software, refers to Berkeley Software Distribution, but it would be kind of funny if AT&T were suing a piece of software, BSD, or more specifically, BSDI, the Berkeley Software Design Inc., was the company that was being sued, which was developing and selling BSD at the time."
Ah.
Hey, very correct.
Have we not heard of stranger things than a company suing some software? I don't think so.
That's true.
Hey, a dead man in Texas got elected this past election.
No, Nevada.
Oh, was that Nevada?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Nevada. The pimp.
Yes, the dead pimp got elected. I thought for some reason I thought that was Texas, but... Yeah, we've had plenty of strange things. I'm surprised that story's not on this show.
His name was Upgrade with two D's. Double
that's
D
right.
For a double dose of his pimping.
Pimping, that's
love.
Right.
Upgrade.
Said, so my bad for not adding that I at the end. Proof that eyes have it. And then he writes 00000101. We're not going back to that debate, Claudio.
No, just don't. No.
Is 101 a signed number or not? Who does 3-bit math anyway?
Yeah.
John Miller Jr. writes, "Parts of the new Intel 8th generation computer that I can't install Windows 7 on. My choice are either Windows 10 or one of the 947 flavors of Linux. I think they're up to 949 by the time we finish this paragraph.
Yeah.
I have a different machine that I'm using Linux Lite, MX Linux, and Linux Mint on." Rock on, Craig.
Yeah.
"My own fault. I should have done more research before buying my components. I have a virtual machine installation of Windows 7 on my machine."
So there's a great way you can hack Windows to do it on the at least the Gen 7 chips. I don't know if you can still do the same hack on the Gen 8 or not. It's a good question. So
Linux is having a problem with the 8th gen?
No. Windows 7.
Oh, okay.
It's Windows 7 you can't install on it because Windows 7 kind of goes, "Hey, you need to upgrade the OS to Windows 10 because we're not going to be able to run." But there is a way you can hack around it.
Okay.
Because I did it on the previous generation of Intels because when I put my new MOBO in and with all the new chip and everything, it kind of went, Windows 7 went, "Ah, we can't update anymore. Oh, we're really sorry." And I was like, Oh, yeah.
Take this.
Hey, I got to tell you, I'm really excited for tomorrow because are you familiar with DeX on Samsung phones?
No.
Okay. DeX is like their pseudo desktop. So if I hook up a USB-C to HDMI adapter to a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse and all that stuff, you can get this desktop-like experience from your phone. Your phone is the computer.
Oh.
Well, tomorrow... They're releasing Linux on DeX, I'll have a full Ubuntu desktop instead of the pseudo desktop that they give you. When I say pseudo desktop, you run apps and full size screen and everything, but This will be a full Ubuntu desktop from the videos I've seen. So I'm looking forward to trying that out.
Interesting. What kind of what kind of monitor interface do you have to put your phone and put it on a big monitor?
Just HDMI.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I've done it with
HDMI.
Where
are you getting HDMI off of your Samsung Note 9?
With USB-C.
Oh.
The adapters that they give us at work, Chuck. The, you know, the USB-C to for your MacBook.
You mean this one?
I can't see this one. But yeah, sure, that one.
That three or four ports on a side and,
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
cool.
So
you just hook up. Yeah, and I've done DVI off of it too, and it worked just fine. So
I wonder how hot your phone gets. Does it get really hot? Or is that like, molten to touch?
I don't know. I know there's a different cooling thing on this Note 9 that's supposed to keep that down. But
you put it between two bags of peas.
No.
Frozen peas.
Broccoli or something, because you'd have to, man. My phone, I don't know. Playing a stupid video game on my phone makes it like stupid hot.
Oh, I know. Yeah. But they do
Netflix most of the time.
Yeah. No, Samsung sells a DeX station that has a fan in it to kind of keep it cool also. Okay. So, I don't know. I'm going to try it out and see how it works.
Let us know.
Carry on.
Report back.
I will.
All right. Let's do the history thing. Wait, we didn't roll. You still have your dice over there?
I do.
Okay.
I'm going to use this one. This is my lucky die from last
time. Man, my dice are in another room.
Going back to orange, the original one that Scott Tyler gave me.
There you go.
Yeah. Not bad at all. I like
this. Okay, Google.
Die.
Roll a 20-sided die.
Hey, Alexa.
I got an 11.
I got an 8. Thanks.
I got a 17.
All right. Same order as last week,
I said,
think.
Google and it says no problem.
So it's me, Craig, then you?
Yep.
Okay.
We'll go this way around the monitor.
All right, fair enough. Roll the music.
On this day in history for November 14, 2018, this is the 318th day. They were almost done with 2018. There's only 47 days remaining.
It was on this date in 1851 that Moby Dick, a novel by Herman Melville, is published in the U.S. of A.
Is it mine? Was that the second one?
All you, buddy.
Okay. The same date in 1886, Frederick Soneneck first developed the hole puncher, a type of office tool capable of punching small holes in paper.
All right.
Like we need a description for that.
Yes, because a hole puncher could be a number of different things. It could be ambiguous. I'm glad they clarified that.
Okay.
Yeah, I read it the same way, though. It's like, really? Okay.
Okay.
Glad they clarified that, because that's exactly what I was assuming. It was on this date in 1889 that pioneering female journalist Nellie Bly, a.k.a. Elizabeth Cochran, there's a trivia question for you.
Yeah.
Begins a successful attempt to travel around the world in less than 80 days. She completes it in 72. Ha! I did mine in 11.
November 14th, 1910, aviator Eugene Barton Ely performs the first takeoff from a ship in Hampton Roads, Virginia. He took off from a makeshift deck on the USS Birmingham in a Curtis Pusher. Okay.
1910. They just laid down some plywood.
Pretty much. And said, on the deck. Go!
Yeah, I don't know about this, boss. You'll be fine.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Go, soldier.
96 years ago today, the British Broadcasting Company begins radio service in the United Kingdom.
It was 49 years ago today that NASA launches Apollo 12, the second crewed mission to the surface of the moon.
On November 14th, 1971, Mariner 9 enters orbit around Mars.
1971. Wow.
I know.
And also today, in 2003, astronomers Michael E. Brown, Chad Trulio, and David L. Rabinowitz discover 90377. It's like a zip code.
It's in the Sedina district. Yeah, it's
somewhere in Beverly Hills, I think.
Sedina, a trans Newtopian object.
Neptunian.
Whatever.
Neutronio.
Yeah.
Happy birthday goes on this day to Austrian violinist, composer, and conductor Leopold Mozart, that's Amadeus' dad. Wolfgang, you must practice. He was born on this date in 1719.
Robert Fulton, American engineer, invented the steamboat, was born on the same date in 1765.
Without which, we wouldn't have Steamboat Willie.
That's true.
Right. born November 14th, 1840, French painter Claude Monet.
Oh, he got it.
He did.
I'm
nice.
Impressed. He knows his painters.
Shut up and just read.
Belgian-American chemist and engineer Leo Bickland was born 155 years ago today. You know what he was famous for?
He was a chemist and engineer.
He came up with Bakelite, that early brown plastic that was really brittle.
Really?
Yeah, old radios used to be made of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's the guy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Right.
American actor and director Brian Keith, born on this date in 1921.
Uncle Bill, right? Yeah, Uncle Bill on Family Affair.
And Veronica Lake, the American actress singer, was born 96 years ago today.
Isn't that a place in Africa?
Lake.
That was Lake Victoria.
Victoria.
Yeah.
Got the wrong V.
American physicist and academic Sterling Colgate was born 93 years ago today. Did he invent toothpaste or something?
Maybe.
Yeah.
American colonel, engineer, and astronaut Ed White was born this date in 1930.
And American pilot, engineer, astronaut Fred Hayes is 85 today.
Fredo.
American programmer and author Peter Norton. I should have a pink shirt on and cross my arms or my sleeves rolled up.
Right.
Born on the state in 1943. You remember the Norton Utilities?
Oh, yeah, I do.
And everybody remembers Norton Antivirus.
Yep. Also turning 70 today is Prince of Wales, Charles. Charles, Prince of Wales.
Yes, that Prince Charles.
Yes, Prince Charles.
An American singer-songwriter, guitarist, James Young, born on this date in 1949.
What band?
The Young Band? What?
James Young, what band did he play for? I put him in there for a reason. Styx!
Styx, of course. Yeah,
that James Young. Oh. Wow. Listener birthdays on this day include, this week, we have two on the 15th, and that is all we got. Jackie Breller. That's... Crazy Joe and Christine's daughter.
Yeah, okay. Jackie.
People are still putting their families on here, I see.
Nice.
Congratulations. Night Star from Horn Lake, Missouri, and is also on the 15th. He's also known by his legal driver's license name, Chuck Charles Jolly. Happy birthday to you. If it's your birthday this week and you want to get on the birthday calendar, drop us a note or put your name on chuckchat.com/wiki, W-I-K-I. And we will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year because we like talking to you and we like when you listen to us.
We also like talking to you.
Talking
or about you or
around you. Yeah,
if we're not talking, we may be talking about you and you may not like what we say.
Yeah.
That's the way it was on this day in history for November 14th, 2018. Let's see, is it band out time?
Here we go. Band out.
Yes! So excited over a little thing. We got the timing down. Well oiled.
Yeah, I was going to do the same thing.
We all do.
Well oiled, like with cod liver oil, you mean?
Ooh,
I want a big foot that comes down over the video.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Monty Python. Having a giant flashback on that was nasty stuff.
Cod liver oil,
what? Well, who invented that and why?
He's on the next all this day in history. Tune in next time, kids.
Come on, go and ask Google right next to you who invented cod liver oil.
Cod liver oil.
You've got your Google Home, just say it.
Oh. Okay, Google.
Oh my God.
Who invented cod liver oil?
Use it only to roll
D20s. From the website price-pottinger.org, Peter Mahler invented a steam process for extracting fresh cod liver oil. He built a lined cauldron in which he steam boiled the fresh cod livers, greatly improving the oil's quality.
But that smelled good.
Thank you, Google.
Of yours.
And ignore me that time.
Wow. All right, then. Now we know.
All right.
Bad news, everyone.
Yeah, this is a bit of bad news when you think about it. We have now reached the point where mining bitcoins is more expensive than copper or gold.
Well, and that's actually the struggle point with Bitcoin was to try and run the machines as cheaply as you can to be able to mine this.
right,
and make money at it.
Well, it's a good thing the price of Bitcoin is still above that of gold.
Well, and not only that, it's also the fact that it's harder to mine Bitcoins now because they're harder to find, and that's the thing. So,
yeah, I mean, that was the whole point when they came out, so they wouldn't devalue, because if everybody could find them, then... All right. The article from The Guardian says the amount of energy required to mine $1 worth of Bitcoin is more than twice that required to mine the same value of copper, gold, or platinum, according to a new paper. Suggesting that the virtual work that underpins Bitcoin, Ethereum is similar projects, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and similar projects is similar to real mining that anyone intended. $1 worth of Bitcoin takes about 17 megajoules of energy to mine, according to the researchers from Oak Ridge. You better hope when you do find one that it appreciates in value.
Yeah.
Oak Ridge Institute in Cincinnati, Ohio, compared with 4, 5, or 7 megajoules for copper, gold, or platinum. Wait, 4, 5, or 7 compared to 17. Yeah, that's a bit more. That's a bit more. Other cryptocurrencies also fared poorly in comparison. The researchers write in the Journal of Nature Sustainability. Mining just doesn't sound like a nature sustainability flat out. Ascribing to the cost per dollar of 7 megajoules for Ethereum and 14 for the privacy-focused cryptocurrency Monero. But all the cryptocurrencies examined come off well compared with aluminium, because it's The Guardian, that's the way you have to say it.
Right.
Which takes an astonishing 122 megajoules to mine $1 worth of ore. Mining is, that's why you must recycle those aluminium cans.
Mm-hmm.
Mining is the name of the process by which blockchains, such as those that underpin cryptocurrencies, are regulated and verified. In Bitcoin's case, for instance, the currency is backed by miners, in quotes, due to the absence of a centralized authority confirming transactions.
Miners
with lasers on their heads.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Galaxy Quest.
Oh,
not miners, you idiot.
They're all under 18 years old.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, those miners.
These miners effectively enter a competition to waste the most electricity possible by doing pointless arithmetic quintillions of times a second. One lucky competitor wins both a reward worth about $8,000 in Bitcoin and the right to verify all transactions made in the last 10 minutes. The rewards may be virtual, but the energy cost is very real. Previous attempts to gauge how much electricity is burned to power the Bitcoin network, still the largest blockchain in existence, have focused on looking at the size of the network in aggregate. In November 2017, one estimated placed the power consumption of the network as equivalent to that of the nation of Ireland.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Another noted it was producing the same annual carbon emissions as 1 million transatlantic flights. I think it's time to stop.
Hey, I think you'd have a better chance at mining for Wonka golden tickets.
Something, yeah. Winning the lottery or something, you know.
Yeah, that $1.6 billion went for one person. Oh, man.
In my state, no less.
It's time to stop. It's time to stop. It's just not going anywhere now, kids. All right, we're going to take a real quick break and be right back with Hacks and Strange Stories, Remember When, and a couple other cool things. So stick around. What do we have? We have a man who comes home 2 months after DNA showed he was dead. From one of my favorite sites. I love that. Hang on. We'll be right back.
I'm home.
How can I help you, sir?
I want my double espresso now.
Sir, the on-base Starbucks only has decaf.
No!
When you're Kylo Ren, you have a tantrum when things don't go your way. It's what you do. When you're a geek, you listen to Technorama. It's what you do. Technorama, only at ChuckChat.com.
Hi, I'm Bill Farmer. You may know me as the voice behind Goofy, Pluto, and many other characters.
Howdy there. This is your old pal, Mr. Haney, and you're listening to Technorama with the... Who are they with? Chuck and Craig.
You know what that reminds me of?
He had to look at the cue card.
You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of when we had Dr. Floyd, you know, and what's his name? Oh, yeah.
Craig? Yeah. Who doesn't know him?
Yeah.
There was one of the episode of The Simpsons where they forgot where the rock band forgot where they were playing. The guy has to look on the back of his guitar. It says Springfield.
Yeah.
Good night. We love you.
That's Springfield. Awesome. Good night. Yeah. Springfield.
I like Kylo Craig because it's so funny. You still hear Craig's twang in Kylo Ren, which is the best, actually. It's so funny. It's like, oh, man. Good times.
Even distorted.
Yeah, even distorted still. Hey, look, it's Craig. I can hear him.
My brand.
It is, man. Tell you what.
All right. From Oddity Central. No. Craig, you may have this one.
This is all you, buddy.
I'm not saying that first name.
No, really. It's all you, buddy.
I'll help. I got it. Supergaliev.
Yeah, that's it.
Superfly Snooka.
He's a
super guy. Yeah, galley super. Anyway, so a 63-year-old man from Kazakhstan almost gave his relatives a heart attack when he returned home after 2 months after they buried his body.
What?
Rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah. Surprise. Oh my, you guys have some stuff.
Yeah. And while stories of people showing up after being presumed dead by their families has made headlines before, Agali's one was particularly bizarre because his death had been confirmed by a DNA test.
Okay. It was his clone.
So let's continue. It's his clone. It all started in July 9th.
My twin brother, Piotr.
It all started in July 9th when his relatives reported him missing from his village of Tamarli. It sounds weird. In Kazakhstan, they had no idea that the unmarried man had been offered a 4-month job on a distant farm, as he had not bothered to inform them about it. Duh. Just text us. That's all we need.
Obviously, he doesn't like his family very much, or he didn't want him into his business. So,
when a decomposed body was discovered near his house, everyone feared the worst. The corpse was reportedly in such a bad state that Agali's family couldn't identify it by its physical traits, so a DNA test was commissioned. Believe it or not, the test showed that there was a 99.29% probability, the highest that test can give, that the discovered body was Agali's. And the
How
official
can that be?
So the official death certificate was issued, and the man's brother organized a funeral.
I'll use ancestry.com. That's why. Ancestry.com.
He found an ancestor, invited him over, killed him, and then put him in a space.
I dug up grandpa.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the body that everyone convinced was Agali's was buried in the District Z. Yeah, following a Muslim ceremony. But 2 months later, the dead man returned. His hand just comes ripping out of the dirt.
I sense a movie.
Yeah.
I want rights.
When a guy came alive and healthy, my daughter, Sally, seeing her dead uncle, almost collapsed with a heart attack.
And now there's more dead Agalis.
Yeah, says the man's brother. The DNA analysis had confirmed that this was my brother. We believed the results and conducted all the funerals and memorials, royal rites. I spent so much money on it. Oh, now you want some money.
You owe me, brother. You owe me money, brother.
I don't care that you're back. Give me the money. You know how much money I spent on you? But it's not even about the money. That's the next sentence. Who have we buried? Maybe his relatives are looking for this person. So his relatives have declared themselves overjoyed to have him back and well, but they have not forgotten about the DNA test and plan to sue experts who conducted it.
Yeah.
However, who performed the test defended herself, saying that one cannot rely on 99.29% probability to confirm a person's death. You know, there's always that, that one in a million chance.
0.71%.
Right. So you're saying there's a chance.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's unclear. Hey, well, what was that? We talked about a story where two people were thinking was it fiction or? Where the person was actually Chimera, and they identified the DNA as being the person, but it was actually their twin or something, or not twin, but they had the exact same DNA, but they weren't twins. That was it.
That was like the plot for Judge Dredd, you know, when Stallone's character killed the guy, supposedly, but it's his brother.
This guy pulled a Gattaca on him.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Here, hold this bag of blood.
Yeah, but it makes you do really wonder who was the body and why was it there? And
how could the test be that botched up?
I don't know.
And that accurate at the same time.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, Alexei or whatever his name is gave a sample that happened to be in the lab at the same time. I don't know.
Or something weird. How did they collect his sample to know which to match it against, too? Was it like a hair sample, skin sample?
Right.
What did they do, you know? Yeah, or maybe this guy was broken to his farmhouse and was
using his
hairbrush
and then
stuff.
Left.
Yeah, exactly. Or who knows?
Died in the ditch.
They just happened to pick the one hair they could identify off the body.
Yeah, it's weird. Very strange.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to know the circumstances behind that. All right.
Yeah.
Then I have a story for you, Brian.
Oh, my.
AI has taken a new turn.
So China's state-run news agency, Xinhua, has unveiled the latest addition to its team of reporters, two AI anchors. Two anchors, one that speaks in English and another in Chinese, have the likeness of some Xinhua's human anchors in their voice, facial expressions, and mouth movements, are synchronized and animated using deep learning techniques.
Yes.
The AI anchors have officially become members of the Xinhua newest agency reporting team, the agency said. They'll work with the other anchors to bring you authoritative, timely, and accurate news information in both Chinese and English. China's South China Morning Post reports that the AI anchors are available through Xinhua's English and Chinese apps, its TV webpage, its WeChat public account.
Mm.
Wow. So the technology behind the anchors is being provided by a search engine company, Sogu. It says its anchors can deliver the news with the same effect as that of a human reporter's. But if you watch a video, that isn't really true.
Right. Here. This is a little the
Hello,
audio.
Hello, everyone. I'm an English artificial intelligence anchor. This is my very first day in Xinhua News Agency. My voice and appearance are modeled on Zhang Zhao, a real anchor with Xinhua. The development of the media industry calls for continuous innovation and deep integration with the international advanced technologies. I will work tirelessly to keep you informed as texts will be typed into my system, uninterrupted. I look forward to bringing you the brand new news experiences.
The CG Hello? Isn't, the
it's
CG
not
isn't
bad.
Too bad.
No, it looks convincing, actually.
It doesn't
I mean,
sound
to a point.
Right.
Yeah, it's still has a synthetic type of voice, and that may be intentional.
Yeah.
Now the anchor that I am modeled after has no work now.
Yeah.
We wish him and his family all the best.
Yeah. Yeah, like it says, you know, maybe future AI anchors, if there are more, won't be stuck in the uncanny valley. Definitely has that feel. Not quite.
Yeah,
right.
A little stiff.
A little stiff. And the language, English language, is definitely like, it was like talking to Siri or Alexa or any others.
And again, that may be intentional because.
Right. You don't want it to necessarily
be human. If it's too human, it gets creepy.
Well,
but you know, maybe. The thing is, I don't know where this lies ethically. I mean, it's news. I guess I can say whatever they want.
He's going to be reporting real news. I mean, people are still going to be writing the news and telling him what to say.
Are they really?
The AI is not going to be making up news.
No. No, it's not the AI I'm worried about making up the news.
It's going to be like those robotic programs that go, how about those politicians in Washington, the AI comedians.
Yeah.
Well, remember those videos they would animate the news before? And like, you know, they showed Trump on fire or something. I don't know. You know.
That maybe this will work better with the AI.
The world rejoices today.
Here's what they say. It's basically they're saying the AI anchors can work around the clock and thus, you know, allow for improved production efficiency and reduced costs because of this.
Yeah, because they don't have to feed them.
Yeah, they don't have to, you know, they don't take breaks. They don't sleep, you know.
It's just like the DJs at the radio station.
We can remove all the toilets.
Right.
We can take all the toilets out.
Yeah.
Save one for the people that are typing.
Save a lot in coffee.
Efficiency, you bet. Yeah, very, very interesting.
Yeah, Miller Jr. says, what if it gets hacked?
Exactly. I mean, we saw the Tay thing. Can you imagine if it starts, you know, spewing propaganda
and profanity
and profanity and in everything China else?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be almost too funny.
Heads would roll. Yes indeed. Oh man, that's still pretty cool.
Challenge accepted.
What if the AI becomes sentient and then he decides to go off script and what are they going to execute
death
him?
Death to all humans.
Yes. Ah! Yeah. Missiles are launched.
You're going to have a Morbo moment.
You're all doomed.
let's just fill him up with our RSS feed.
Morbo, you're so funny. Yeah.
Doomed. A Chinese Morbo. That's awesome. That is so awesome.
You'll come for your children first.
Yes. Oh, the vision of that is perfect.
Yes.
All right, chat room. What do we have in the chat room, Craig? What do you see?
John Miller Jr. I'm not seeing everybody, I don't think, but I see John Miller Jr. Oh, and Loriana Byers Miller. She says that she is introducing her son to Technorama for the first time.
She's my cousin.
You're welcome.
Sweet.
And by the way, I replied already and apologized ahead of time.
For yourself or for us?
Yes.
Blood test was DNA will still confirm we're related. Unless we go to the lab that they used in Russia.
How do we know Craig really is Craig?
He might be artificial intelligence too.
Yeah.
Doomed.
Most prolific podcasters.
My name is Craig Steppy.
Hello and welcome to Technorama.
Ha ha ha, Chuck, you are so funny.
I still got it. Welcome to show number 549.
All right, who else is in the chat room? Come on.
John Miller Jr., Ben Blixt. We have Dave Hurdle, Dave Hamilton, former coworker at my old company. It's a light night. Is there an award ceremony or going some Game of Thrones premiere tonight or something? What did we miss? Walking Dead final show, something. Who knows? That's all right. If you want to catch us, we're around at Sunday at 9:30 Eastern time. We
sometimes
do this on Facebook unless family emergencies, business travel, or personal illness come into play, then, well, we just got to call an audible and say, not this week, sorry. But if you subscribe to our webpage on Facebook, Technorama Podcast, you can get alerted when we go live, and then you don't have to worry about us trying to share it, but we appreciate you watching.
Then it's much easier for you to avoid us.
Oh no, those jackasses again.
Thanks for the warning. I won't accidentally scroll past that one.
Yeah. Right.
All right. We have Remember When time? We haven't played this in a while.
Wow.
Yes. I like this story. Yay. Can I do it?
Sure. Yeah. That's okay. It's actually your turn.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. It is my turn. We take turns on this show.
We do.
So nice. These men ate poison.
So you didn't have to.
As we wait for the page to finish loading from Gizmodo.
I wish somebody had said that before I ate dinner. Oh, no.
What have I done?
If you sat down to eat at any point in any part of the U.S. in the 1800s, nothing on your plate was quite as it seemed. The level of vile, often toxic contamination in basic consumer products was almost unimaginable to modern folk raised under the auspices of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. Your morning coffee? It wasn't already mixed with chicory. There was probably quite a bit of sawdust mixed in, with scorched and ground peas, beans, and dandelion seeds for color. The honey in your tea? Sweetened corn syrup, complete with wax honeycomb. The spices in your table? On your table. Finely ground coconut shells, burnt rope, or straight up floor sweepings.
And Taco Bell proudly carries on the tradition.
Hey, careful. We might need them as a sponsor someday.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
The flour in your bread, mixed with crushed stone, gypsum, or dirt. Let's not forget about the beetles and other mealworms that could have been in there. The brown sugar in your grandma's cookies, spiked with ground insects. The scotch in
grandma.
The scotch in grandpa's after supper tipple. Poisoned wood alcohol dyed honey brown. This is a wonderful commercial. The milk in Junior's glass? Certainly watered down, almost definitely whitened with chalk or plaster of Paris. I have heard that before. Often dosed with preservative like formaldehyde to keep it quote-unquote fresh and occasionally topped up with pureed calf brains to mimic the cream on top. The fact that the past generations managed to survive in their own kitchens was a medical marvel in its own right. And those dark days are only barely behind us. We've only made it this far, thanks largely to the efforts of one zealous chemist and a few brave, iron-stomached volunteers dubbed the Poison Squad.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wait, wait.
There you go. There you go.
As the Trump administration continues to roll back regulations on everything from worker safety to environment destruction, a new book from Deborah Blum, The Poison Squad, One Chemist's Single-Minded Crusade for Food Safety at the Turn of the 20th Century, takes us back to a time when the very idea of government-enforced regulations was laughable. In 1883, Dr. Harvey Washington Wiley, a chemist professor from Purdue University, was named chief chemist of the Agriculture Department. A farmer's son, he was horrified at the additive-riddled state of the American food industry, and once he assumed his new office, he began methodically investigating food and drink fraud. During the course of the campaign, he became famous for conducting shocking human tests. This sounds like a great story for Ridiculous History.
Oh, yeah.
Have you listened to that podcast?
Yep.
That's a fun one to listen to. They do stories like this. If they haven't already done this, I'm going to write them and say, you guys got to cover this. During the course of this campaign, he became famous for conducting shocking human tests on groups of young men who volunteered to test tainted food products for the good of the nation and who became known as the Poison Squad.
Oh, man. Can you imagine? Yeah. What happened to Bob? He called in sick. Again?
Yeah. How did this happen?
Yeah.
Could have been the arsenic. Who knows? Ultimately, Wiley won. The landmark 1906 Food and Drug Act was known as Dr. Wiley's Law, but he spent 30 years fighting inside and outside the lab to help make America's kitchen safer. In doing so, he willingly risked the lives of dozens of patriotic young volunteers, a decision that still raises serious ethical questions, you think?
Yeah.
In an echo of modern medical trials, which often draw in poor and working class subjects, many of the applicants for what would become Dr. Wiley's Poison Squad... who are finally struggling young clerks or financially struggling young clerks. Sorry, I'm reading behind a camera. It gets kind of tricky. Struggling young clerks who responded to the lure of 3 square meals a day. Ooh, they were probably made out of tile squares. They recruited.
Linoleum.
Recruited to test potentially poisonous substances. The volunteers had recorded everything they ate or drank, recorded their weight and pulse rate before every meal, collected their urine and feces for lab analysis, and they were to be examined by a doctor twice a week, whether they needed it or not. I added that last part in.
It's a baby Ruth.
Oh, my goodness.
The first round of trials started with a cleaning product, borax, then also a popular preservative, because Wiley expected it to be fairly harmless. By the study's end, half of the 12 men had dropped out due to ill health.
Whoa.
Wiley's attitude on borax changed as a result. It, quote, "It should not, I believe, be put in foods of any kind except when they are plainly marked, and even not then except in special cases." This is a letter from apparently what the doctor wrote. "Dear sir, I read in a paper your experiments on a diet. I have a stomach
that can stand anything.
I have a stomach that will surprise you. I am afflicted with 7 diseases. Never went to a doctor for 15 years. They told me 15 years ago that I could not live 8 months. What do you think of it? My stomach can hold in anything." This is one of the applicants, I
guess. Yeah.
You can put old rock. Yeah, it says volunteer letter for Poison Squad.
Oh, boy. The next featured salicylic acid on the menu and had even more immediate effect on the squad, who began exhibiting signs of nausea and dizziness almost immediately after digging into their spiked victuals.
But let me tell you, it cleared up their faces like nothing flat. No zits at all.
It cleared my acne.
Yes.
They also tested out sodium sulfate, a salt of the preserved sulfuric acid.
Whoa.
Man. Wow.
This only nine made it that like, in that test. Yeah.
I like this right here. The results were grim.
And if you made it to round four, you got a teapot.
It was made out of lead, but it is okay still.
Yeah. Rub it on your face.
Wow, that book sounds awesome. I'm going to have to check it out.
I would love to read this. This reminds me of what was the book?
Concrete Jungle.
With no, what did they do with cadavers? It was I can't remember. It's a distinctive cover. It has just like 2 feet laying on the gurney with a toe tag.
Huh.
It was like The Secret Life of Cadavers or something like that.
Interesting. Okay.
I'll have to look it up. That was interesting. It's like, you know, when you donate your body to science,
this
they don't always do what you think they do with your body. They may just take your leg and use it to test car collisions because they don't, you know, they'll use, it doesn't make sense to have, you know, what happens when a car hits somebody's leg? Well, they need a leg to test it out on. And then your arm may go somewhere else and your brains may go somewhere else. So it was fascinating to read it.
Hey, this story started to remind me of just a few years ago. The Food and Drug Administration investigated a cheese factory. I'm trying to figure out which one it was. It says it was 100% real Parmesan cheese, but it had filler ingredients like wood pulp, cheaper cheeses, such as Swiss and mozzarella.
It
but
can't be real
wood pulp
Parmesan cheese unless it comes from,
well,
was it Parmesan Italy?
It's like champagne. The claim of 100% real Parmesan kind of rules out everything else.
Maybe the real Parmesan has wood pulp in it.
Well, I think
that's the recipe.
It's recipe. Well, you know, they can kind of say it has 100% real Parmesan. It's just not 100% all Parmesan.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But anyway, they found it had wood pulp.
Is that like Stephen Wright when he walks up to the 7-Eleven and says, and the guy was closing up? Says the sign says you're open 24 hours, not in a row.
That's right.
Yeah, not in a row. Right.
All right. We want to thank our patrons because they really help keep this show going. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much to the following people: Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros. Yes, that Gary Lindros. I'm getting you warmed up. John Clifford, Leon. John Noble.
That John Noble?
That John Noble?
Yes, that's our John Noble. We're proud of him. How about he listens just for that? If he listens anymore at all. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media. Not Sunday Morning Media, Saturday Morning Media.
And not Friday either.
Yep. Not Saturday Night Media. That would be too adult for us. Steve Therian, Jorga Schrawin, John Miller Jr., Amber Elstad, and our latest, newest, greatest
victim. I mean, volunteer. Welcome to the Technorama Squad.
Harold McKinstry, thank you very much. You guys rock. There are more spaces on our board. If you're interested in joining, you can go over to chuckchat.com. Oh, no, Patreon. Excuse me. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. For as little as a dollar a show, you get your name enshrined on the show. Sorry, I had to steal that from Mark Blackburn.
Enshrined.
Right. And you will get extra content. We are recording right after this show just for our Patreon people. And the topics go all over the place. You should talk to an existing Patreon person. See if it's worth it. If not, pay us a dollar to shut up.
Yeah, interview them. Yeah.
We can't lose, I think.
Sure, why not?
We'll go with that.
What could possibly go wrong?
And yeah, I'm in marketing.
Yeah. Trust him. He's honest. He's a politician marketer.
Hey, they'll let anybody into marketing, Chuck.
Apparently so. Two more stories to go. Let's do the Media Corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the Media Corner.
This one's on you, Craig.
Yes. The wheel in the space keeps on... animated.
No.
Anyway,
we almost made it three shows without singing. Reset the counter.
Yeah.
It's like the trailer park and the tornadoes.
The clock's been reset. All right. So much of Doctor Who's early past has been lost to time. Not the, you know, I'm thinking not the, you know, the, never mind.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'm thinking. Not the romantic time traveling sense, but there you go. But in old BBC archival policies meant that for the original recordings of the earliest years of Who in the 60s were wiped, leaving nearly 100 episodes seemingly gone forever. But one tiny... Who would think to... nobody's going to watch this.
They needed the tape. Media. So, it was expensive, so they just recorded it over for the next show.
Yeah. So just like my wedding video?
Wait, you're married? Where's your proof?
Yeah. There's no evidence, Kim. Anyway, so one tiny slice of Vintage Who is getting a revival next month. While the original footage of over 90 episodes of Doctor Who's first two episodes have been lost, many have the unique case of having their audio live on, mainly through the dedicated work of fans who recorded the episodes on the broadcast. The heady days of free home video.
You held up the tape recorder to the telly.
Yeah, I did it. I've done it. And the BBC has released several lost episodes, pairing the audio with newly created animation. Now it's planning to do the same again, according to Doctor Who News, with that missing Patrick Thornton, tale, The Wheel in Space.
Thornton?
So only two of the six episodes that make up Wheel, a Cyberman story that introduced a second Doctor companion, Zoe Herriot, played by Wendy Padbury. These are very English names. Currently exists in the BBC archives, but for the first time, a 10-minute slice of the first episode, which is still missing, is being prepared for a screening at the British Film Institute in London next month as part of the BFI's Missing, Believed, Wiped programming, a regular event examining the history of missing TV in the UK and the efforts being made to bring parts of British media history back to life. The sequence will eventually be included as part of the BBC DVD release in the future. This is just a small snippet, according to Rob Ritchie, one of the team who has worked on the animation as part of a wider attempt to restore the Wheel of Space through animation. But for now, another missing slice of Doctor Who's history is getting a bit of a regeneration.
I get it.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
That is neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, who would think that somebody actually sat and recorded all that audio and kept it over all these years?
And what quality it's in.
What condition.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I did it with Star Trek and Speed Racer, you know, a tape recorder, but I would not say it was the quality that it should be.
No, I think I did Flintstones or something.
I never did that as a kid.
No?
I never did. No, I never thought to do that.
Because you grew up with VCRs.
No. I grew up with a tape recorder as well, just like you guys did. You know, had a cassette deck that had a mic plug-in, a little black mic with a little cord, you know.
Yeah.
My buddy Jimmy and I remember being goofy and making stupid things. Probably lots of fart jokes, I imagine. You know, when you're you know, 6, 7 years old.
As kids do.
Yeah. But yeah.
I put masking tape all over the speaker on the TV, thinking I was going to capture all of the audio into that mic.
Well, have the mic up there. You may have at least taken some of the background noise out.
Yeah, because I'd be like, my family would start talking. I'm like, shut up, you know, trying to get them to be quiet.
Craig, you're in the way.
You still say that when we're doing Technorama.
I was going to say,
Harrison, keep it down.
Some things just stay the same.
Right. Wow.
I still can't make a decent recording.
The tools are different. Same story, though.
Yeah. All right. We have a photo gallery that we encourage you to go see.
Oh, yeah. This is great.
Go ahead, Brian.
So a 21-year-old cosplayer can turn herself into anyone. And basically, they're 10 plus of her best transformations. It's amazing. Her name is Senya Perova. She's a 21-year-old cosplayer from Russia. Perova has been doing cosplay since 2014, and a unique feature combined with her artistry, she has built up a giant following, 40,300 on Instagram.
That's a nice following.
Yeah. She said her first con was in was the Ava Expo in 2014. I made Oswin Oswald. It was very strange and cute for me when people asked to make a selfie. But take one look at her photos, you understand why she's become such a sensation. From Kim Possible to Corpse Bride, the young artist brings each character to life with stunning realism. While the young woman seems to have a natural talent, she wrote that she doesn't remember what exactly inspired her to be in cosplay. I think some other cosplayers inspired me. I've been scrolling cool pics on website and wanted to make something as cool as I saw. So each of her looks is brilliant. She writes that her favorite cosplay thus far has been Arya Stark from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. It was good with that one.
Yeah, it was interesting to make her, and she's one of my favorite characters from Game of Thrones. Mavis has been simply has a simple costume, but I really like to play her as well. In the future, the cosplayer is looking forward to creating costume for her favorite childhood character, Mulan. I need to buy new material because I want this cosplay to be perfect. if you look at the pictures, it's just freaking amazing how close she gets to it.
Yeah, some are really, really good. I mean, it's hard to do a cartoon
look
like
Frodo.
Kim Possible.
But yeah, some of them are pretty. Like the vampire from Hotel Transylvania is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, she manages to get the wide eyes.
The wide eyes is amazing.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
Hey, she looks like Frodo for sure.
Yeah, her Arya Stark is good, but I think my favorite is still, what was it? I got to find it. Mantis.
Oh, Mantis, yeah.
Her Mantis is with the
big eyes and everything.
Yeah. She's even got
the
facial expression.
I think she's had to Photoshop her eyes. There's no way that they're that big.
Yeah, she probably did a little bit, but still, I'm sure it's pretty, I don't know. I mean, look at the actress that they did, you know, her makeup for it. So I imagine she probably followed pretty close to that.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't see her makeup, like, without effects, so I don't know. Yeah.
Who else did she do? Do they have any other ones in there that are?
You mentioned she's got Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
You mentioned Victoria from Corpse Bride, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wednesday from the Addams Family.
Wednesday from the Addams Family.
She's not quite as brutish as the picture, though.
It's pretty close, though. It's scary.
Hey, Daria.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Daria one's pretty good. Kim Possible's pretty good.
Yep.
The Snow White from the Disney Princesses. Yeah. Ralph Breaks the Internet. The Corpse Bride is really quite good, considering, animation.
Yeah.
Versus real.
When we did have a chance to talk to a professional cosplayer at a recent Phoenix Fan Fest. Amber Skies, Donna? Yeah. She's over the top.
Name.
Over the top.
Hey, it sounds like a stripper name.
Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of cosplayers take you know, pseudonyms.
A stage name.
Yeah. So that they can cover, you know, so stalkers. Yeah.
She was very helpful. Was very friendly. She gave me a couple of makeup tips. I said, you know, what are you using to hold down your bald appliance? Because she was doing a cross of from Galaxy Quest.
Oh, by Grab Thor's hammer.
Alan Rickman's character. Yeah, she had a gender bender version of it.
That's cool.
Yeah, and she did really good. I mean, the clothing was on. She also does a magnificent from Moana, the volcano lady.
Oh yeah, I mean,
she was the volcano.
That's pretty cool.
It was, yeah,
yeah. Cosplayers are an interesting breed, you know. And honestly, even you know the people who do it on the cheap, it's the fact that they're tempting, they're making, trying to make strides. That's what I always like to see. And when you talk shop, oh man, that's when they just like open up and just usually go berserko on you. My friend Rowan does a lot of cosplay too, and it's amazing.
The thing that really hit home this weekend was you don't have to be, you know, a computer nerd. You can be a geek in whatever genre you are in. There was a car show, an old car show at our church this past Saturday, and we were just walking by. It was a 66 Ford Falcon, something like that. And this guy pops out of his chair. He was sitting behind the vehicle, hops out of his chair like, oh my gosh, I got a live one.
Yeah.
And he went on for probably 15 minutes with techno babble about the car that I didn't understand half of. You know, it was like, headers, flathead, injector, carburetor.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Well, he clearly loves his
passionate
stuff.
Passionate about it.
But he was passionate, but he didn't come across with that passion. It was still like, wow. You know, I thought some listening to some computer people were dull, but this is
cut and dried. He's very, you know, very factual about what he did. Yeah. We replaced the headers on this with, chroma-matic.
This is all original, but the radiator we had to swap out because the radiator didn't do that because you can overheating. And I tried to engage him a little bit like, so in 67, they didn't have unleaded gas. What do you put in these? He goes, we put in grade two. I said, what's grade two? He said, well, you know, you got the low octane, which is usually like 87, and you got the high octane, which is 91, 92. It's the one in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's no lead in that. You don't have problems? No, I haven't had a problem. If I remember right, the lead was to help with the valve stems. You don't have a problem? No. I'm struggling to remember my 12th grade auto shop stuff.
Yeah.
You're like, oh,
I don't remember quite what the problem was other than the environment.
That was the big problem was why they got rid of the leaded gasoline.
Yeah, so I mean, you don't want the lead in the air.
Right. More carbon monoxide. That's fine.
Yeah. What's
like on my tailpipe?
What could possibly go wrong? Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was an interesting discussion, but it was one of those where he couldn't read the cues like we wanted to get out of there.
Well, as you know, a lot of folks who are passionate and geeky often have poor social cues reading. Yes.
Yes.
You know, I don't find that at all, Brian.
Yeah.
We just hang up Skype. Right
Yeah. Hey, wait, click.
Right.
That's it for Craig. Right. Hey, guys, I want to click.
Alrighty, we have another question of the week. We're going to get out of here right now because we are well over an hour and we thank you for your time. Our question this week is, what was the worst thing you've accidentally played on a speaker?
I told you about mine the other day, Chuck.
I can mention a few things I've accidentally said, but I'm going to have to think about the speaker part.
I was walking my dog and I was playing. I didn't have my headphones with me. I thought, you know what? I'm just going to play a podcast on the open speaker. And one of my neighbors said, "Hey, how you doing?" And walks up, and I'm playing Mad at Dad, which they're pretty free with the language on there.
Yeah.
And you would think it was the first time I'd ever tried to find the pause because I was like fumbling around trying to, and they're free with the MF this and MF that. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa.
I was just listening to the Sam Jackson reads the Bible.
I was saying.
You know,
going over the latest political debate, so I know how to vote this week.
Yeah, that was funny. I think it was the first time I was using the pause button.
All right, we will post that out to social media and see what you come back with. We're looking forward to hearing that one.
Worst thing, actually, by the way, I did speakers.
I did throw that at Dave and told him what happened.
That one's on you, Craig.
Yeah, I know. I was like. Yeah. Can y'all tone it down? Tone down the language next time I get in a weird situation.
All right. We're going to back out of here then. Here comes the music. All right. That guitar riff means it's the end of the show. We appreciate you giving us your time once again. You can find our information for social media and everything else over at chuckchat.com/technorama. Give us a call on the listener line, 707-530-2428. Thank you, dear, for putting that up. We also thank my lovely wife who does the video engineering for us every week. She doesn't get enough credit on this show. But
thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Donna.
We would have no video if it weren't for her.
It's true. Because you certainly couldn't do it, and Craig couldn't do it at the same time.
No, it's really, really
men hard. Can't multitask. That's a problem.
Well, we can't for sure.
I have a challenge doing this on my own in the morning, but she's not going to get up at 6 to do my video stream at work. Anyway, thanks for joining us, Brian.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Craig, give us that binary high five.
All right, 101, everybody. See you next time.